From the blistering sunny shores of Swamp Hill Studios, located in beautiful Turtle River, Minnesota,
just east of the swamp
and up the hill a bit, it's the Rito Roundup!
Hello everybody, it's me, Reed Olson. It is February 8th, 2023. I almost missed my line there.
How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing good. Rito, how are you?
Good. It is a warm day out there. Holy cow.
Right.
50 degrees in Bemidji in February.
February 8th. Yeah, I saw 51 on my thermometer today. Some of the hard pack ice on my deck is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that way this morning.
Yeah, just a warning. I don't know when you're listening to this, but if you live in the Bemidji area and stay off of County Road 20 where they're redoing it.
Is it breaking up?
It's so bad. You can definitely tell where the trees have been cut back enough that there's southern exposure. Where there's shade, it's fine, but there's like 3 or 4, you know, mile long soft spots. I almost got my poor little sports car, my little Corolla, stuck driving out here. So
I was surprised they left that open. I thought I was under the impression that road was going to be closed to through traffic.
Yeah. Well, it was fine when it was frozen. It totally reminded me of roads in Alaska when I lived in Fairbanks. And it's fine. I mean, you can't go 70 miles an hour or nothing, you know, but you can go 50, you know, 45, but not this. So, you know, who'd have thunk that in? But now you know it's going to come in April and then again in May. And, you know, stay off of that road if you can, because we're going to have a bunch of freeze thaw cycles and stuff.
And just deep ruts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one spot where I slowed down and I didn't think I was like, oh no, I don't know. Like that's, you know, in like thick mud, just you don't stop, or snow, you know, if you stop, you're stopped. But I made it through.
Man, I had a really scary experience this past summer as a result of that road. It was closed to through traffic and I was on my motorcycle.
Was it haunted?
A little bit. I almost made a ghost on that road this day. And so I was getting over to, and I meet a buddy at Mobile Maze. And I should have just taken 22 and come out on 71 and gone down there. Uh-huh. But I said, I'm going to take Pincherry, uh-huh, connect over to your Kasaw 57.
Uh-huh.
And that little dog leg around that lake there,
uh-huh,
it had gotten a lot of traffic since they closed 20, and it had rained, but it wasn't raining but it had been raining the couple days before that, and everything was soft,
squishy,
right?
Yeah.
And they had a grader that was going, right? So I get on that road, I'm like, I can do it, it's just a short dip,
uh-huh, uh-huh,
on my motorcycle, a street bike, not a dirt bike, you, uh-huh, know, and it's kind of, uh-huh, heavy, and I get on this road and I'm like, start hitting all the potholes. And I'm like, this was a big mistake,
uh-huh,
big mistake. And I started getting nervous. And I'm like, well, you're already a third of the way. And then, so I'm coming around that, the second bend,
uh-huh,
where the lake is.
Right, right.
And then I see the grader is right in front of me going like 5 miles an hour. And the only thing keeping me upright is like,
right,
keeping,
right,
a
forward
speed
momentum
up,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
And so I'm like, I can't slow down or I'll just squirrel out,
yep,
on my bike.
Yep.
So I'm like, I'm just going to have to pass him. And right. And so I had to cross over the little hump that the grader was making.
Like the wake.
The wake. And it was just like class 5 clay, soft muck.
Uh-huh.
And it was almost to the rims of my tires.
Uh-huh.
And I was just like, the back wheel was kind of spinning up and I'm passing him and I'm looking down to my right and I'm seeing the blade.
Uh-huh.
And I think I surprised the driver too,
uh-huh,
because he wasn't expecting to see me. And then I'm like, please don't crash right now, because if I just fell over and get tangled up underneath that blade,
uh-huh,
it was gonna be it. So I gave it a little more juice and I kind of got out in front of him, and then there's another car behind me too, and I wasn't going fast.
Uh-huh.
And I could see this car was like right on my tail.
On your tail. Oh, so then if you fell, you're gonna get ran through with the
and
blade
I,
and then driven over.
I can see the headlights of this car right behind me in my rear view mirror and I'm already freaking out.
Uh-huh.
But I'm on the last stretch. I can almost, uh-huh, see the stop sign coming. And I turn around, I look back at this driver, and he just gives me a thumbs up, like, you're doing good.
Okay.
And I'm going, all right, he's on my side.
Okay. You know?
So I just was squirrely right to the end.
Because he could see what
he was watching
with.
Me, and I'm like, if I go down, at least someone's going to help me stand my bike back up, you know?
Oh, I thought you meant, like, tell your tale.
So I finally made it to the stop sign, and then I'm like, I took off, and like 20 pounds of mud just go flying off the tires and the bike.
Wow. That was riveting.
Yeah.
I was on. Oh, I'm glad you made it.
I know.
I mean, I
thank God for that Kasoff 57, that pavement.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't want to go on 20 now. So
no, I've been seeing a lot of deer, but I didn't see any coming out today. I was too busy being white knuckled on the road.
See a beaver out there?
I have not. No. I was out on the swamp this weekend there with you playing our games, our winter tournament. And, you know, was playing around. I saw the beaver lodges. They're big. You know, you get right up to them. It's amazing how big they are. You know, it's pretty neat. So I don't know if I threw the wicket. Right, playing bocce, and I meant to throw over the beaver. Oh, with my ball. It was with my ball, not the wicket. It was over the beaver lodge. I threw it way too high and not far enough, and it broke through on the top, and I had to crawl at the very top of the beaver lodge.
I walked down there today, and my friend and I both looked at the tracks going up the up the beaver lodge. We're like, who's climbing up? Someone threw a ball up there?
Yeah. So I got up there and there's a hole in the top, almost like a chimney, you know?
Did you see him?
No, but you can see that there's pathways up there, and my ball is like balancing on the top. It's like, remember the game, is it called pick up sticks, where you pull the straws out until it all collapses or something? You know what I'm talking? It's kind of like that, where there's these, you know, skinny branches up there.
Right.
And it's narrowly, precariously sitting on like three branches that kind of form a triangle that it's wedged in.
You just take a deep breath. And
I did, yeah. And I slowly had to stick my hand down like 8 inches down into the top. And I could see two different tunnels that would bring you to the top. It's like, don't bite my hand, you know. And I grabbed it out of there. But it was pretty neat to see, because I don't think that my ball made the hole. I mean, it would have, but I think there was already like a chimney hole, like a 6-inch, 8-inch hole at the top where there was no snow. It was really like a vent, you know, for the lodge or something. They probably cook and stuff, right?
Did you get a good whiff or?
No, I didn't.
No smell?
No smell. No, not that I remember. But I think that I was just trying to get out of there because I didn't want my my throwing hand to get bit by a beaver.
It's just like on Flash Gordon when he sticks his hand into that tree stump.
Was he okay?
Yeah, he was fine.
Well, good.
There was some kind of space scorpion in there.
Did it bite him?
I don't know. That was the test.
Okay. Anything else? It's been
one thing I noticed this weekend when I was out. Was just all the chickadees singing, and I was under the impression that they were
migratory.
Because I don't remember hearing them.
Oh, they're super hardcore birds. Chickadees are the coolest bird. They live here year round, and they're tiny, you know, and their metabolisms just go. I mean, look at their legs and their feet. Just imagine like how much blood can possibly pump through there, you know, and they're able to overwinter here. And like migrating birds, when they migrate through Minnesota, they will seek out chickadees because chickadees are known as being really good hosts, and they will show other species of birds where the food is right now.
They got the lowdown.
Yeah. They're really great. They're just super neat. Very social critters, very smart, you know, they're really, really neat birds.
Well, then, yeah, I guess I got nothing new.
Yeah.
but it was nice to hear them. It reminded me of all the different birds that are going to be coming back soon.
Hey, Rob.
What?
You know what time it is?
Uh-uh.
It's time for the Grossel Watch.
Grossel Watch.
Come on, you bunch of crown eating
sons of bitches, haul me to jail.
So I guess this is a new segment of the show. Well, I mean, the last episode we talked about the Crown Act, and that Grossel voted against the Crown Act, which in Minnesota, which said that employers can't discriminate, or that one can't discriminate based on natural hair textures or styles or whatever. So you voted against that for whatever reason. I want to every episode do a quick little state, you know, the state is in session right now, the state legislature is, and kind of talk about some bills, but then also talk about things that that Grossel didn't vote for, is what I'm guessing, because he just votes against everything that's pretty good. The legislature passed and the governor signed into law the PRO Act, which basically guarantees access to abortions. You know, so nobody will be surprised that he did not vote for that. You know, I am very happy that his party is not in the majority, because the bill that they would have been passing right now would have been horribly restrictive and really, really dangerous. So that's our Grossel watch. Voted against the PRO Act, voted against the Crown Act, you know. He did vote for the tax conformity bill that was unanimously voted for in both houses, because Minnesota is about 5 years behind conforming their tax legislation or statute legislation with the federal, with the IRS. That's why we have to fill out two different W-2s, because they have a different formula, because IRS keeps changing theirs. And then, so you have to do conformity bills to match them up, and we just haven't done it. So that was good. I guess I'll give them props for that. Took them 5 years. But I also just want to quickly, so from Grossel specifically, a member of the Minnesota GOP, the Republicans, but the party writ large or whatever right now, they are just unhinged. Like I pay way too much attention to Twitter. It's not healthy. I shouldn't do it. The conservative, or I shouldn't say conservative, the vocal Republicans on Twitter that are in the legislature, and like the Minnesota right wing news that is on Twitter, are just hammering people with, like, this is the most extreme legislation ever. You know, everything is like, oh, so extreme. You know, they're getting mad. Like, you guys aren't, you know, you don't care about bipartisanship. You know, like last year, the Republicans would not, they had this really great compromise at the end of the session where both parties would get some wins on, at the time, I believe it was an $11 billion surplus. And there'd be some tax cuts for the rich, because that's what the Republicans just got to have, you know. And we are going to have like money for lunch programs, you know, at schools and stuff, you know. But we also give the corporations a tax cut. Yes, yes, we'll give the corporations a small tax cut, and then the kids get food, right? That's fair, right? And then at the last minute, the Republicans were kind of like, well, we know, and I think both parties were kind of guilty of this, but I think the Republicans were especially, because the Republicans walked away from the table. Said, why negotiate with the DFL on how to spend this $11 million when just in a few short months, we're going to have the trifecta. We're going to have the Senate, the House, and the governor's office. And so we can spend it however we want, and we'll have total control over legislation. So they balked on doing any kind of deal with the Democrats at all. And a bunch of projects like shelter funding and housing programs and wastewater treatment facilities in rural America, you know.
They thought they were going to just sweep the elections and get all.
And get it all. The Republicans did. Yeah, yeah. And so all of these projects that were in these bills back in the May of 21 end up not getting passed and not getting done. And they were like, every community in Minnesota was, there was one agency or government or organization or business or project or another that was depending on this legislation passing. It was all there. You know, they had it all written, you know, and it was very much a compromised bipartisan bill, and they walked away from it. So then they lose the Senate and they don't gain the governor's office because they run a crazy man, right? And they have a lot of really extreme candidates, you know. And I saw someone say, of course you think what the DFL is doing right now is extreme. You're so far to the right that anyone just left of center, or, you know, is going to look extreme to you guys, you know. So don't believe the hype. I would say when it comes to the Republican, like chicken littleism, you know, the sky is falling sort of stuff that they're screaming. Finally we're passing some legislation for the first time in years, because we don't have the obstructionists getting in the way, you know, which they're very good at, you know? So I'm just excited about, like the fact we're going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on additional housing, projects, trying to make it more possible to build more workforce housing and market rate housing and supportive housing throughout the state, which we desperately, desperately need. And we're going to be putting more money into shelter programs, which is wonderful because there's a lot of very poorly funded shelters throughout the state that could really use that money to, there'll be capital dollars to improve the shelters themselves, the sites. The DFL passed basically like a driver's license for all bill that anybody in Minnesota that's of driver's age, you know, that qualifies or whatever can get a driver's license regardless of your residency status or whatever. When Republicans had control, I believe it was under Republican control, like under Plenty, that they said that you have to be a citizen. I believe it was at one time it was legal for anybody that's here. I mean, when I was in Germany, you could get a German driver's license. And when we had exchange students, they would get American driver's license.
You just got passed the test.
Yeah. But you also, I don't know, I guess there was a law change then that you have to show that you are a legal resident. But yeah, so the DFL is doing a lot of good stuff. They're going to legalize weed at some point here. It's just a matter of, I mean, I think there's a lot to figure out there. I think we talked about that last time, but I'll always throw that out there as another good thing. Decriminalize, expunge, you know, all that kind of good stuff. The county had a meeting last night. Did you go to that?
I did not go. I tuned in for some of it.
Yeah, me too.
I had one eye on it. Let's put it that
yeah.
way.
I think, they were in closed session for quite some time. Like an hour and 15 minutes or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. I don't know. What did they say? It was the administrator's review. Cause they added that to the regular. No, Rob and I didn't do our homework when it came to watching the whole movie.
Something like that, but I might've been wrong. Cause it does get added later on, right?
They have to say like we had the, yeah. So whatever, don't listen to us there. We don't know what we're talking about. They were watching a documentary on Minnesota chickadees, eating popcorn and stuff, laughing while they knew that people were sitting there waiting for them to start the meeting up, drinking.
That's like, what you guys did in closed meetings?
No, that's what we never would have done that. I'm just saying that the new kids here, they're nutty. The main thing that they talked about at the county board was and there's a couple different things here, but they first were talking about the sales tax for the new jail. They're going after bonding dollars to pay for it. But if they can't get the bonding dollars, then they're, or a combination of bonding dollars and sales tax dollars. And I think it's really important that because if the legislature passes, I should say if the legislature grants the county the opportunity to have this countywide sales tax, it then has to get approved by the voters. And it's really important. People are like, oh, great, a new tax. But it's really important to understand that we, the taxpayers of Beltrami County, are going to pay for that jail if we can't get bonding dollars or anything over what we get in bonding dollars will come from Beltrami County. So how do we want to collect those revenues? We can do it through property taxes where it will only hit Beltrami residents, or we can do it through a sales tax where we know that 50% of that sales tax is paid for by non-county residents. So yes, we will have to pay that sales tax every time we go out, but I think it's going to be 0.5%. So that will, I'm going to guess, I guess I'm not doing the math in my head, but in theory, whatever you pay that year in sales tax will be less than what you would have seen in an increase in your property taxes. And maybe you say, but I don't own anything. I'm a renter. Well, your rent is going to go up as the property taxes go up because you pay your landlord's taxes, not your landlord, right? He collects them from you. So your rent will go up. So having the sales tax is, in my mind, really the it is inflicting the least amount of damage on Beltrami County residents. Though it could be argued it's a more regressive tax, perhaps, than property tax. That argument could be made. But I think it's the way to go.
Anything else at the county?
Yeah, the state. And you may have heard this happened also, I believe, in Ramsey County, where Beltrami County got notice by the Department of Corrections that they need to bounce, I think, 50 people or something out of Beltrami County Jail. They had like, I think they had like 72 hours or something to do it. It was really tight.
Are we just overcrowded or what's...
It had to do with staffing and safety, I think. I don't know exactly what their failures were or whatever. But it's a big lift for the county to all of a sudden have to turn around and relocate all these people. And I think that the max now that they can have in the jail at any one time is like 80 or 80 something. And because the jail is broken up into, I think, 4 different categories or 5 different categories of inmate. I mean, the obvious ones are male, female, right? And then you've got, high risk, low risk or whatever. And each one has, you know, this one has 15 beds. This one has 8 beds. That one has 30. So you may have only half of the female beds filled up, but have too many people to go into the medium security, and you can't move them over to the women's. So you have to move them to Alexandria, you know, Douglas County or Morrison County or something like that, you know, or Clearwater, but they don't have a very big jail, so they can't take many of our people. So then we have to pay for them to be driven everywhere. And then when there's a hearing, we got to go pick them up and drive them for the hearing and then bring them back to the jail, to the county. Incredibly expensive. And so at the top of the meeting today, it sounded like they were going to allocate like $375,000 from the ARPA funds that the county still has.
To do what with?
To pay for the out of county housing for the inmates, because it's going to be the housing is we have to pay the other counties, and they charge more than what you're in, you know, and they do it they make a little profit.
Is it just because the jail is so short staffed now that's causing I would rather spend $375,000 on 4 more positions and get us up into compliance.
I don't know the exact cause, but it probably is a combination of staffing levels and physical plant and you know,
and the condition of the jail. Maybe is it,
there have been a series of attempted suicide, successful suicides, and some other issues. Some where people, I think that not all the time was it negligence by the county jail, but there are some situations that, you know,
shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, they shouldn't have happened. And plus we know that it was called MEND was the medical company that we retained to do all the medical services. The owner, the doctor, he has since lost his license and has a number of cases against him throughout the state because he had businesses with or contracts with several counties. So that didn't help us at all, having that bad actor as our medical provider. So it's just a series of ailments, you know, old infrastructure, not built to modern best practices, short staffed, hardworking in corrections officers, but very short-staffed and overworked. And again, I just can't stress how short-staffed they were, you know.
So the counties that are receiving these inmates, are they like making a ton of money on this? Is it like...
No, they may. I'm trying to remember what a bed per night is. I don't remember. It's not $100, you know. I mean, I don't even want to guess. It's less than 100. I mean,
the transportation is probably the most expensive.
Well, it's staff time. Yeah. You know, and
it seemed like it'd be this, like the sort of snowball effect where the more people come, the more money they're receiving, the more staff they can hire. And before you know it, you have a fully functional and operating at capacity jail.
Right. But the physical plant itself, the jail itself, won't allow, and the DOC won't allow it to be a fully functioning jail, you know,
not ours, but the ones that are getting the money.
Oh yeah. Well, which is great until those, that revenue dries up, because that revenue is just kind of, it's hit and miss, you know?
So when we get our fancy new jail built, maybe people will start sending their,
I hope not. I mean, us. It's a horrible thing to do, because you're pulling that person away from their family. You're pulling them away from their legal counsel. And this is something I was really trying hard to make sure didn't happen. And I don't think it did. I didn't want to build a for-profit jail, because I know of other counties that have done that. And yeah, when you're getting inmates from outside, it's great. You can employ all these people. They're pretty decent jobs. They've got good benefits and stuff. They're good union jobs, you know. But when that well dries up and counties are no longer sending you, and you don't have guarantees with anybody that they're going to pay for five of your beds guaranteed every month, five, you know, 30 night stays, five beds, you know. So if you don't have that guaranteed income, now you've got this big facility that you still have to heat and you still have upkeep on, and you still have stretched out spaces then with fewer guards and fewer inmates. And then the math doesn't work out. What they are doing is just building to the size that they feel the community is going to need. You know, I think that there's better ways of spending our resources to keep people from the desperation that causes them to visit the county jail. You know, that's the challenge. And I feel like spending all this money to design a larger jail is kind of given up on, but then at the same time, we are investing in mental health care in our community. We're going to see from the state investments in housing. We need more treatment beds. You know, we need more like housing stabilization efforts. But I think we're working slowly our way there. And I think that this legislative session and the next legislative session, we may see some good lurches forward, you know, really excited. I think with that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with more of something.
Well, you did state, you did county. Oh boy.
It could be anything. We'll come back and talk about the city. And we're back.
Yeah.
It was probably one of our larger breaks.
It seemed like it.
I couldn't wait to get back. I had a weird dream. I have dreams sometimes that I am like rushing to the airport to go on vacation, like usually abroad, like in a foreign country, and I can't find my passport and I can't find my
ticket
or whatever. Can't get my phone to work. I had a dream just the other day that it was the reverse, where I think I was in Germany, where I studied in Germany for a year when I was in college, right? And so I was in Germany with a bunch of people that I didn't recognize, but you know, in the dream, they're like, yeah, just kicking it with these guys that I've known. And I have to fly home, and they're like, oh, but we're having so much fun, you know? And I can't find my ticket. I can't find my passport. I can't get my luggage to zip and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, it's too bad. You have to stay. I'm like, okay. So then I had to stay an extra day or something. Fascinating. All in a dream. All of that. Isn't that... It boggles the mind.
You're still there.
In some ways, I was like, man, just tromping around, you know, tromping around Europe. Anyway, we're going to talk about the city, and, you know, we've got a big discussion here about Nate Matthews, the city manager, and his review. And that's kind of the thrust of the meeting. But there are two items that I just want to talk about that were also in the meeting, but not as emotionally charged and stuff. And, just to kind of highlight them, cause I think they're important. One is that Northern Township, came to talk about a MOU, which is a memorandum of understanding with the city to partner on a project to bring sewer and water at least like out to the DNR, maybe even to Bemidji State Park.
Golf course,
Rutgers. Yeah. And maybe even around, well, I don't think the golf course would probably stay on their own. A big chunk of it, I bet, as well, to do all the watering. That wouldn't be on the city, but maybe the restaurant would tie up. But so I don't remember exactly where, how, if it goes all the way around, but it goes at least to the DNR office. So it's having sewer and water around, city sewer and water all the way around Lake Bemidji, to me is an absolute must. That should really be one of the main goals of our community over the next like 10 years. And just really protecting that asset, you know. We know we have a lot of septic systems that are failing that are on the lake. And so then there's questions about annexation because we're going to bring this infrastructure to you. Northern does not want to get annexed. None of those homeowners want to get annexed. Annexed is when, you know, when the city will say, okay, we're going to bring you sewer and water, and now you're no longer going to be a resident of Northern Township. You're going to be a resident of the city of Bemidji.
So Northern Township would go away?
No. Northern Township is 6 miles by 6 miles, right? We're talking about one very, very residential and developed street, right? What would be proper for the policy that the city of Bemidji has right now, if they're going to go up around, they need to annex where they're bringing in that infrastructure. And I'll just back up a little bit. Back in the aughts, the city struck a deal with Northern Township. And through all of it, I just will say right now that the Northern Township Board of Supervisors, they are good people. They're hardworking people trying to represent, you know. So I don't want it to sound like I don't have a lot of trust in them, which I absolutely do. And they're trying to do the best job that they can. And getting sewer and water on the lake is really important. But Bemidji has a bit of a bad taste in its mouth of bringing infrastructure up into Northern, because we had an agreement back in the aughts where we brought it up. We being the city of Bemidji brought it up Birchmont Drive up into southern Northern Township, right?
So like from BSU to the boat landing.
Yeah, I don't think it went. Did it go up to the boat landing? Is that where it terminates? I think it's so. Pretty. Yeah, I think you're right.
There was another road there and they redid that road. Yep. And I think it all happened at the same
time. Yeah, so the city brought that in with an understanding that the city wouldn't have to pay for any of it. But what the city would do is they would assess the homeowners, just like I got some work done in front of my house and I got assessed per curb foot of the road, that percentage of the job. So we did that with Northern and said, okay, your residents will pay the entire bill.
All the construction, all of
the infrastructure, getting it all put in, that will all be bore through special assessment on the properties.
So the city came in and said they're going to assess them 100%
of the job. The Northern Township would pay for the entire, the Bemidji residents would not, Bemidji tax dollars would not pay for any of the construction. All of it gets paid for by the residents of Northern Township. As soon as it came in and as soon as the people got their assessments, the wealthiest families that live on Birchmont organized a lawsuit against the city and brought all of the other many of the other homeowners in with them. And basically they told the other homeowners, you can join this lawsuit and we can do a class action lawsuit against the city. And we will cover all of the legal costs. All you have to do is be a party to the lawsuit. And that's what a lot of people did. We ended up being in court with them for, I think, a decade.
What was the case they made?
They said that the city had a policy, which is true, that when you bring in infrastructure, you never assess the resident, the city resident, more than 25% of the overall cost.
The city pays the remainder.
And the city pays the remainder. So the Northern Township residents were saying, you can only charge us 25%. Your own policy says that. And then we said, no, the policy said only city residents. And then they said, no, it says resident. And we're a resident, you know, kind of just this squishy, but we ended up getting sent to arbitration. The valuation was deemed incorrect. And so then they had to do a new valuation and reassessments. And a bunch of the people that owned smaller lots, their assessments ended up going up. So they joined a lawsuit that then made their tax exposure or whatever even greater, you know. And the people that instigated the lawsuit, they knew that as soon as it came in, they were going to sue. It was a very, from my perspective, a very disingenuous group of people that have a lot that took advantage of the city of Bemidji and their neighbors to get their tax assessments on one really important project down. So now having that bad taste, and we ended up finally settling, but it cost the city, I think, at least $500,000, you know, that's a lot of money for the city of Bemidji. It's a lot of money, you know? So now we're looking at this new project. Again, we have good actors, you know, the supervisors, even through all of that, the township board that wasn't them. It was residents doing the lawsuit. Right. So they're good partners and we really need to get water around there. But from my opinion, and this won't surprise many people, is, you know, the city of Bemidji should annex everybody that lives on Lake Bemidji and bring the water around and the sewer around. And as septic systems fall out of compliance, we need to make sure that they are then hooking up. That's not going to happen. I think that the Northern is looking at incorporating into its own city to keep Bemidji from being able to annex it, because we have a right to annex township land if we're bringing services to it and if it's urbanizing, right? Which we could easily say about that stretch. But politically, it's going to be hard for the local politicians to assert that, to do that. The city would definitely get sued by Northern. The state constitution is on our side and we would win, but it would cause some bad blood between the government units. And I think that's going to be a heavy, heavy lift. So it'll stay in their hands. But what we need to make sure of is that they're not too lenient on those homeowners and that they're going to love me hearing me talk about, we need to make sure that they, but we need to make sure that if your septic is non-compliant, you must hook up. You can't put in a new septic. You have to hook up to the city infrastructure.
So at this meeting, Northern is back. They sent a representative discussing the memorandum of understanding here. And they must know that there's some of that, like you said, a bad taste in the mouth. So mm-hmm. did they come back with a plan to sort of reassure the city about how this would work out, or is the memorandum of understanding?
Yeah, so what they want to do is bring the water around and they want to tie into the city system. But what they will do, I believe, is form a sewer and water district. I suppose if they incorporate it, it would just be the city of Northern. So if they incorporate it, then it'll be the city of Northern. Or maybe they'll name it'll be Reed Town. They'll name it after me. Either the town would do it or they'll create a sewer and water district. And so the city would probably oversee the construction because it'll be tied into their system, but then it'll be basically a northern township asset, and we'll basically have a big water meter between Northern Township and Bemidji, and then either the township or the sewer and water district will pay the city for that flow.
And they would figure it out on their end.
Right. And then they would collect from the households. Yeah. From the parcels. But what's really important is that we get those homes, all of the homes on the lake, eventually onto city sewer and water take that pressure off of the lake. Cause we have algae blooms there. Commissioner Lukacek called me irresponsible for talking about this, but there is unmitigated human waste going into Lake Bemidji. There just is. And in other lakes. And after I said that and he chided me, someone read it in the newspaper or watched they were talking to me at my restaurant. They were tourists and they said, "Hey, by the way, we own a cabin on, I won't name the lake. And we know that our neighbors know that their septic is not complying and it is flowing into the lake. So when he called you a liar and Chicken Little or whatever, I said, would you please email them and tell him that, you know, and CC me on it so that he knows that, you know, that this is serious. So really important to get that infrastructure on the lake. And it's really important to get people to tie into it when their systems are no longer working. So let's move on from that. I talked probably longer on about that than I needed to. The other thing, was that the city had, they've been on a flag collecting spree here. We got tribal flags for the three reservations around Bemidji, White Earth, Leech Lake, and Red Lake. And then on Monday, they passed a resolution, had a ceremony, and installed MIA POW flags. And, I'm not going to remember his name, but there was a gentleman that spoke there and watch it. It's all on tape. And it was very moving. There's a gentleman who was a POW in Southern Vietnam for 4 years. And his anniversary of his release, the 50th anniversary of his release is coming up on, I believe he said it was the 13th or the 15th. It's next week. Yeah. And he still had the chain that bound him around his ankles with him. And he showed it. It was really powerful, really, really moving. Really nice man. I talked to him briefly afterwards. Very, very moving. So wonderful. Joe Vinny sang the Star Spangled Banner, so you know it's a Bemidji vet affair. anyways, it was really moving, really happy that the city did that. It was good. So there's as we talk about all this, all the vitriol that we're going to talk about in a second, hang on to that sometimes, you know, we're slowly moving towards water around the lake and sewer, and we're, you know, respecting or paying a little bit of honor to our warriors and it's good stuff. Now though, maybe I'll move to talking about the let's start with the letter to the editor, right?
Bring us up to speed a little bit.
So at the January 17th city council meeting, at the beginning of the meeting, Councillor Thayer said, made a motion to add an item to the agenda, which itself is kind of unusual to do unless it's, you know, that they set a time to discuss Nate Matthews' continued employment was the verbiage. So then they have a big meeting. Yeah, listen back to the tape, watch the meeting, the last podcast, and watch the meeting on from the city website. But so then they tabled it until this past Monday, the 6th, February 6th. And so then and they got an attorney to talk to them about what was going on that would be at the meeting. So before the meeting in Saturday's paper, that would have been Saturday, February 4th, there was a letter to the editor by six former city council members, one of whom would become mayor at one point. So Rita Albright, Nancy Erickson, Roger Hellquist, Dan Jourdain, Michael Mealhous, and myself. So this is a people of different political stripes, different lengths and times of service on the board, on the council. So it was a really good group just saying like, wow, what we see you guys doing is very unusual. seems really heavy handed. Nate Matthews is a wonderful city manager. You know, don't fire him because you don't like him or whatever personally, you know, for petty reasons. Just he's a really good manager. And I think I might've said in the last podcast, like anytime you fire someone, you got to think like, okay, who's going to replace this person? You know, and are you going to be able to find someone as good or better? And they'll be hard pressed to do that. So we kind of had this letter that it was firm and assertive, but it was pretty gentle. It wasn't like we weren't calling people names, but and then on Monday, several of us and other people from the
community. It was packed.
Yeah.
I mean, and your letter wasn't the only voice about this. I mean, after it happened at the last meeting, social media lit up. People were talking about it. What is going on?
I've been getting constant texts and messages asking me what's going on with why is Audrey mad at Nate Matthews, council member Audrey Thayer, you know? And I, throughout all of this, my recurring theme is I think that the motives at play are stupider than I think. I really do. And we'll see what it all is. There's a lot of, apparently a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. That was one of the things. So I spoke at the podium. There were probably a half a dozen of us or so that spoke to the council, at the portion where people can comment. And I was talking about my representative, Emily, Rivera, who they have really sidelined. Like right now there is nobody on the Parks and Rec committee from the city council, even though she's willing to take that post. They're leaving it open rather than giving it to her, saying that they'll give it to the person that fills the now vacant Ward 1 seat, which probably won't happen until August. So she could at least be there on an interim basis. I was on that committee. I was the city liaison on that committee, and having that council person there, because at the end of the day, the council is going to vote on something. And so you're not exactly steering them or more than you're just telling them, I think the council would do this, you know, and there are times where you say, well, I don't know where the council is going to go, but here's what I think, you know? So,
and then when the council person would come back and give a report, right, to the,
right, this is what's going on. This we're looking at doing this.
So when
this
you do get a vote,
park,
you're not just hearing it for the first time.
Exactly.
You've got some
right.
insight.
And the park has that liaison, has that ambassador that can help explain stuff because the council member knows their colleagues and knows how to explain. So that's what I talked about. But then a lot of people are just talking about like, and I addressed the there is a lot of people on city staff feel like there's just a very tense air, kind of feel bullied and kind of pushed around by certain members of the Bemidji City Council. And it's just a really not fun time to be there. There are two points of the meeting that had to do with Nate Matthews and with the what I perceive as a dysfunctional city council. We had the people speaking to the council at the public comment period, but then also we had the agenda item where they were going to follow up on the previous meeting and set the date for Nate Matthews' review for what ended up being his annual review. So in the first part, there were a good six or seven, eight people that got up and spoke,
just asking them to slow down and not, not be so heavy-handed with Nate, and just it's hard. Yeah. So,
well, one thing I think that helps kind of shed some light on this is his annual evaluation is coming up in May, I think, right? And
his anniversary.
His anniversary.
May.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think by his contract, he's required to have an annual review around the time of his anniversary. Right. There's some flexibility there, right?
I think he said around, but not after.
Yeah. I think it's like within 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, and so it sounded like, and it is the prerogative of the council to fire the city manager at their whim, right? I mean, there's a process that has to go through, but they don't have to, wait to the annual evaluation. They can do it sooner, right? And it sounded like at the last meeting, that was what Audrey was proposing. Right.
Right.
A time to set about, and she said the continued employment of Nate. So if it was just his annual review, nothing would have been said. They would have just coasted into it. So this was obviously something different than his annual review, right?
Mm-hmm.
That she was proposing.
Yes. And so what they did was they ended up getting an attorney from, it's Flaherty and Hood, a firm, I think, down in the cities that specializes in like municipal law and municipal employment law, which is its own like kind of subcategory, right? So he was up to, his name was Brandon, I didn't catch his last name, to give advice on how to proceed. And the meeting started, or I shouldn't say the meeting, the agenda item, when they started talking about the agenda item, the mayor, and I said this in the last podcast, I really strongly urge you to go back and watch the ceremony, the MIA ceremony. It was pretty good, pretty moving. But then watch that agenda item at the end of the movie. I always call it a movie. That's so funny. At the end of the meeting, but they talk for like 45 minutes or an hour, basically trying to set the date for Nate's review. But at the very beginning, the mayor says, he reads this statement that he crafted about how it gets a little wonky here, but the motion that Audrey made, the council member Thayer made on January 17th, to discuss the continued employment of the city manager was kind of an unlawful motion. This should have been found out of order and not entertained, but instead the mayor voted for it. Ron Johnson voted for it. Josh Peterson voted for it. Audrey Thayer voted for it. Lynn and Lynn Eaton and Emily Rivera vote against. But so it passes that they added to, you know, and, because of the way that the contract works, it's kind of wonky, but so he reads this 2-page, admonishment of what they had done at the previous meeting, but now we're going to move on doing basically the same goal. It's just, we're going to follow the charter and we're going to follow Minnesota state statute. And they even threw in there that what they had done violated open meeting laws. And I'm not exactly sure how.
The mayor said that. I didn't understand what he was getting at there.
Yeah. He said that it violated the city charter and open meeting laws. And I don't know what that violation was. I mean, we surmised and alleged that, that they were clearly having discussion outside of meetings about how they were going to do this stuff. But I don't think that that's what they were referring to. I think it was much more procedural or something. So he kind of read that and he said, now that being said, let's have a meeting, you know, let's set a date for the meeting. And the attorney gave his advice and he said, you can either just do nothing and just follow the contract and just do the annual review, or you can move it up, and call it a special
A non-annual
evaluation.
Yeah, because the regular one is the annual evaluation. You could have a non-annual.
So the annual one would still have to then happen a couple of weeks later, right?
Well, unless they fired them as a result of the non-annual.
Of the non-annual, I suppose. But I think Audrey seemed keen on, because she asked him to talk about it again, and she's trying to figure out how to make the motion, and then she decided not to. But it looked like she was going to try to move that way. But then once they tried looking at the calendar, they couldn't find a date that worked for them until March 29th, which I thought was really funny because it just seemed like it's got to be in March for whatever reason. It could be in April. It could be in May, you know. But no, we got to do it as soon as we can. And that's the soonest. So that's when we're going to do it. So.
And if they did the non-annual, I think there were some contract stipulations that they would have to have a public hearing about it. He could have an appeal process regarding it, because this would be, you know, a premature to his normal evaluation process, which I think at a regular performance review, you have the option of renewing the contract or not. That's different than firing somebody. It's just not renewing the contract. Mm-hmm. And you could terminate the relationship with Nate and it wouldn't trigger the appeal and the public review.
All that is like well and good. And people are talking about like, well, what can we do? What can't we do? But the question that kept coming up, I think in a lot of people's minds, because my phone has been ringing off the hook, you know, why, why are they doing this? You know, and council member Eaton, at one time he said, okay, after like 45 minutes, it's like, I haven't heard anything in this discussion that tells me that there's any urgency here. And if there is something urgent, what are we doing? Let's hire an investigator and let's get to the bottom of whatever it is that you guys are talking about. It sounds like it's pretty important. You know, pretty.
If there's allegations,
let's look into these allegations. And then the mayor says, he says, well, I want to get, you know, he says, something can be urgent and not an allegation. It's like, what kind of doublespeak is that?
He said that, you know, to be clear, there have been no allegations that would require an investigation. But I do have some concerns.
Yeah.
And per the statute, I'm unable to share those with you here, but there, you know, things can be urgent without there being
an allegation. And at that moment, if Lynn is a very good faith actor, you know, a good man. He's only been in office for a few meetings. And I mean, he's walking into insanity here, you know, and you kind of need to know, I don't know even if Robert Rules is right, but just kind of how things work a little bit. If I were in his shoes or in Councilmember Rivera's shoes, I would have demanded that we immediately go into closed session to discuss a personnel issue, which is allowed by state statute 882. whatever, you know, go into closed session and just say, okay, what is it that you keep bringing up? You guys keep doing this where you're, it's clear that the three of you and maybe Josh Peterson, but for sure, Audrey Thayer, Ron Johnson and George Prince, they know they're on the same page as one another. They know things that the other people don't know. And that is insane. That would, if it were me, I think of like, if it were Lukacek, you know, either of us would be foaming at the mouth, pounding the table saying, I demand to know what the hell it is you guys are talking about. You know, this is how can we have a two-tiered, council, you know, it is insanity, you know? So, but they didn't. I mean, I just can't tell you how odd I find this all. So that was Monday, right? Today we're taping. It's Wednesday evening, about 6 o'clock. On Monday at about 9 p.m., so about 35 minutes after, maybe 45 minutes after the meeting let out, Audrey, and we pilloried her, you know. I mean, we were saying, like, I mean, I think we were respectful. Nancy Erickson called her a bully, and the mayor admonished her for a personal attack. And Rob's, you've been watching county board meetings. You know, we protect our staff. You can't bully our staff, but yeah, you can call us any name in the book as long as you're not cursing, basically. Right. I mean, you look at Lukacek got beat up pretty hard on a couple of meetings. I've gotten beat up a couple of times. They can be ruthless, but we're public servants. We're elected. That's our job. And so when Nancy was talking about an air of bullying and calling Audrey a bully, she wasn't wrong. I mean, Audrey is bullying staff. I've heard that, you know. Even if she is wrong, it's still her First Amendment right. That's why they have this period, is so that us supplicants can speak truth to power, you know. But they've got it wrong. You know, you want to trash a city employee? By all means. You're going to trash one of us? You are out of order, you know. So about 45 minutes after the meeting, Audrey puts out on Twitter, quote, "I owe nothing to anyone. I owe no one anything except to my family. I could have been better in so many ways. Professionally ruthless. Going to wear my t-shirt tomorrow." And then in quotes, I suppose, on the top on her t-shirt, "Underestimate me. That'll be fun." And so just a few months ago, she was running for election to be the city council member at large, talking about how she wants to represent the whole city. And how we are all her cause, right? And now she's telling us, you know, she's only been seated now. This was her third meeting as the at-large. And she's telling us that she owes nothing to us, that she's her own person, and that she's going to go her own way and just take care of her and her family, but not the community, you know? And you get in her way, and that'll be fun. imagine if I would have written that as a county commissioner, the heyday that my I don't know, whatever the opposite of a fan is, would have had with me, if I would have said something like that, you know. And she made another post on, I think, on Facebook that again was just kind of saying how she's got her plan, you know, and I feel that from some of them on the board, on the city council. It's like, no, you guys voted us in and now we do what we want. We don't listen to you, you know, and we don't want to be criticized by you. That's not fair. We didn't sign up for this criticism. It's like, yes, you did. I mean, that's what the job is criticism. You know, I was telling you earlier, and I mean it. I miss the negative feedback that I get. I miss the phone calls. I miss the emails where people are yelling at me, you know, because it makes you kind of rethink your, you know, or, you know, but no criticism. We should be able to do whatever we want. And I don't know if I said this last week, but I believe that, and I think we'll be talking about this more as different things come to light, and then we'd be all like, ooh, tune in next week, right? There, as Audrey said, there are some things going on behind the scenes that you don't know about. And there actually are. There are some interesting things going on that I just don't know exactly enough about to feel comfortable talking about it. But I think we will all be learning more in the next coming weeks, and we'll see where things fall. My fear is that the goal of this click is to get employees into the city that are subservient to them individually. Like I said in my statement, you seem to be demanding loyalty by staff to you individually, kind of like Trump did, rather than to the power of the city council resides in the whole council of seven people. Not any one of them on their own are completely powerless. It's together as a group in a meeting, in front of the cameras, in front of the people. That's where their power, it derives from the people as a board, as a council, right? So they need to remember that or learn that maybe. I don't know if some have forgotten or just never known. But what they're doing right now of like, you need to be loyal to me. You need to do what I say, whatever. It's not how to run an organization, let alone a democracy, you know. So I guess that's my rant.
So we're back to Nate's annual review. They set a date to do that.
Yeah.
They had to work on some process about it. I think he's going to come up with some metrics for how he wants to be evaluated, and he's going to send that out, and he's got a lot of work to do. I think he's got to do something by like in 2 weeks.
No, it's like 10 days,
10 days or something.
And I think he said he was going to like then rush to show them the goal setting then that I think he was anticipating doing me. Well, I won't say that he was anticipating, I don't know, but, goal setting with the staff, you know? So yeah, he's got a lot to do to prepare for that meeting. I guess I would strongly encourage people, as I said before, to please watch the meetings, and tell us what we're missing. If you know what's going on, if you know why all this craziness is happening, why don't you email us or give us a call? But you can email us at readoroundup@gmail.com. That's readoroundup@gmail.com.
Well done.
Seventh take. No. And please, I mean, let us know. I know that, I mean, I'm trying to kind of sketch out, and I hope I'm doing a halfway decent job of what's going on. It just seems bizarre. It is so bizarre. It's like Game of Thrones, but there's no dragons or power or gold, right? You know, I mean, our job is to pave the streets and try and attract more housing and industry and better paying jobs, happier people. And, you know, if you do email us, we're going to send you a lot of gifts, probably a trip somewhere. I don't know.
Trip to the mailbox
to return our gifts, return to sender. Okay. I think we're going to call that an episode. As always, our theme song is brought to us by the Jake Baldwin Motif. And thank you, Jake. 2 weeks from now, there's going to be more meetings. I don't have them memorized like I used to, do I?
It's more meetings.
Yeah, right. So it's the 20th and the 21st, I guess. February 20th at the city, 21st at the county. You can go to their websites and figure out how, when, and where to participate. Please be active. Go to the city website. Watch the last meeting. And thank you for sticking with us all the way to the end. We love you.